To answer is human, to question is divine. Welcome to the world of the Hidden Gateway, an exhilarating podcast exploring the concepts humans have been struggling with since the dawn of existence, such as, who are we? Is there such a thing as good and evil, or are they arbitrary constructs? Does the paranormal exist? How can we evolve to a higher state? Can our mind influence what we term as reality? Providing a transcendental approach combined with hard-nosed humanistic analysis, we invite you on a journey to question your worldview in this theater of life. Join our host, Justin Williams, as he explores the outer realms of faith, the supernatural, human potential, and even our concepts of the universal creator with a fascinating array of guests. This is the unseen world, magical, mysterious, and mystical, where your only limitation is your imagination. This is the Hidden Gateway.
Welcome back to the Hidden Gateway podcast. I am your host, Justin Williams. Now, before we get started with this week's show, I just want to ask, if you haven't done so already, please like and subscribe to the show on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts. This will be a tremendous help for us to reach an even larger audience across all platforms. As always, your support is greatly appreciated, and I thank you all. Today, we are happy to have Ilana Freeland on the show. Ilana is an author, storyteller, lecturer, and researcher whose focus is deep state issues such as MKUltra, ritual abuse, chemtrails, HARP, and transhumanism. She is phenomenal at what she does, and I am so happy to have her on the show today. Ilana, welcome to the Hidden Gateway podcast. How you doing?
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, this is great because I've done 3 interviews this week because I told everyone they had to wait in May. I'm supposed to be writing a book, but I'm still actually getting ready to write it. And it's, again, another edition of my recent book, Geoengineered Transhumanism. And this one, it's a boring story, but the publisher, Inner Traditions, approached me and asked for a second edition of that book. But because the book was 650 pages, that was a little too much for them, and they felt that the reader is a little intimidated by that tome. And so I'm writing it as 2 books, one concentrating on the geoengineering and the other one concentrating on the synthetic biology that the geoengineering is connected to. So that's kind of where my head is these days, is preparing I did the geoengineering one, and now I'm starting the synthetic biology one. So it's good to get me out of my head to a real person at the other end of the computer and talk about, you know, what I devote, my entire life to now.
Right. And yes, you do. And you do a phenomenal job, as I said in the intro there. And, you know, I can't stress enough how happy I'm to have you on the show today. In fact, it's a few fellow podcasters I know that you've been on their show, and, you know, they said you were just simply a phenomenal guest. But I just want to get right into it, Ilana. So first and foremost, I wanted to ask you about Rudolf Steiner. I know you're a longtime student and would love for you to tell me about him and his ideologies. And also tell me about the eighth sphere as well, too. I learned about that recently.
Very good. Very good. Okay. So the first time I encountered Rudolf Steiner was when I was, believe it or not, back in, the early 70s. I was a very young, idealistic woman, and I was on my way to China to study Chinese medicine. I thought I was going to be a Chinese medical doctor. I had a letter of introduction to a very good teacher, and I set it up in California, going from one shipyard to another. I found a double-masted schooner that was going to be sailing to China, and I booked a voyage with them by I was going to cook for the crew, and that would be my pay my passage over to China. So I agreed to, while it was in dry dock, I agreed to go to Hawaii and wait for them there. So I was in Hawaii, and I was at that time staying on Oahu. A guy let me stay at his place. He was out of town, and I kind of looked at his bookshelf, and I found a book called The Way of a Child by A.C. Harwood. Now, I've always known that I would be a teacher. I've known since I was 5 years old. People used to ask me as a little girl, so what are you going to be when you grow up? Are you going to get married and have children? That's what they always say to the little girls in the 50s. And I said, no, I'm going to be a teacher and a writer. I mean, I knew from day one what I was doing here, is kind of unusual, but there are a lot of children that are like that. So I read the book that night, and boy, was I knocked out. I mean, it was so brilliant. Just his way of approaching the child, his way of introducing letters and numbers to the children. I mean, all that sounds so simple to people, but if you introduce these things wrong, you know, you can turn a child against knowledge very quickly. And that's what's happened, of course, in our public schools. Most of the people who are teaching there are probably teaching because they get summers off. And it doesn't have much to do with the calling to be a real teacher. So I took a walk I stayed up all night and finished the book about dawn, took a walk on Kailua Beach as the sun was coming up in the east. And I said to myself, this is it. Wow. This is it. I can learn from this man how to be a great teacher. And I didn't know yet about all the other stuff he was into. I didn't know about biodynamic farming. I didn't know about his medical ideas or anything. I didn't know what a giant I had encountered. Subsequent to that, I took teacher training for Waldorf Education in 1977. And then I returned to where I was living, which is Washington State. And I started helping people start schools. I started four Waldorf schools, because I wanted children to have that kind of education where you basically, in a nutshell, you use the arts to teach the academics. And you, of course, at teacher training, one of the things they do is, well, they do two things primarily. One is they reteach you the subjects that were taught to you badly, such as like mathematics, like science, like history, geography. You learn how you can approach those things in a very creative way, with storytelling, with pencil sketches, chalk sketches on the blackboard, all the artistic ways, movement. And then the second thing they did is they taught us the pedagogy of how, who the child is. A child to the Rudolf Steiner people is someone who's new to the planet for this life, but has probably been here many, many, many times. Yes, reincarnation is absolutely assumed in the Rudolf Steiner education. So you're presenting different themed stories each year. For like kindergarten is very much the simple fairy tale, you use it in a variety of ways to get the child to tell the story, to act the story out, to paint the story, and you let them live in that very simple consciousness. Then by first grade, you're still in the fairy tale, but now you're in the more complex ones, the longer ones, the really deep ones that are just amazing therapy, truthfully. You know, Carl Jung used fairy tales very much in his therapy. So you're doing the same thing there, but now you're introducing letters and numbers from the fairy tale. From, you know, the if there's the if there's three heroes in the story. You've got the number three. So you're looking at 3, 6, 9, 12. And you kind of plant it in something that has a feeling in it and has an enriched image in it. And then you go on to grade two is fables. That's where Native American myths come in, stories. You go on to grade three, Old Testament stories and other religions from that Babylonian, Chaldean area over there in the Middle East, Northern Africa. And you then go on to the fourth one, which is, again, Native American stories, a little more complex with or Norse mythology, where there were all these different gods that did different things. And you take them all the way through to when the sixth grade, I think you're doing Roman stories, Roman and Greek, and suddenly, boom, you're out of the storytelling realm and you're in history. And you're right, material fact of what happened when and different stories from it, the Odyssey, the Iliad, the Aeneid, all these different stories. And I loved that because I have a very easy sense of the narrative. I was raised, by the way, in an Eastern European neighborhood in Detroit, Michigan.
You're from Detroit.
I wasn't born there, but I lived there with my mother's parents who were Romanian immigrants. And we moved there when I was three. And I was raised in the neighborhood with only Eastern Europeans. There were no Americans, really.
Yeah.
And I heard 5-6 languages a day easily.
Yeah.
And ate all this great food. And there were dances and there were stories and there were all sorts of, I mean, it was a very rich cultural environment. And I didn't really encounter America until I was going on 9.
Okay.
And then I moved out of the neighborhood and boom, here I was with a very different people, Americans. So that, I think the way I put it together is that beginning really set me in the narrative of many stories and many ways, many approaches to things. And so that was the beginning of my Waldorf. Waldorf is where I began with Steiner. Now, when I stayed 16 years in the Waldorf movement, starting 4 schools and teaching in them and, you know, being administrator and basically jack of all trades to do conflict resolution, do parent education. I mean, there was so much when you start a school. It's a lot of work. And eventually I burned out, truthfully. And yet I still loved Waldorf. I just needed to return to writing because I had been a writer before I hit Waldorf. I had worked for different newspapers. I had a journalism degree. So I was able to work for, I think the last newspaper I worked for was the Montreal Star. And I returned to writing, but I was sort of like came at it from a different angle, sort of just writing what I felt like. I wasn't like trying to get a job in writing, but I began to start a book about America since Kennedy's assassination, and that's the Sub Rosa America series, Sub Rosa America, A Deep State History. It's 4 books, fiction-based, in that I tell a story about my generation, the 60s people, and I do it through basically 7 characters that take a trip from Santa Barbara all the way on the Route 66, called the Mother Road, all the way until they're in Dallas, where they go to see where Kennedy was shot. That's and it's sort of the story of my generation. And during that, there's a character in the book called the Austrian Initiate. He's always referred to. He shows up here. He shows up there. Something from him speaks to them. And that's Steiner, because my generation, the generation I experienced, was not the way Time Magazine and Newsweek Magazine tell it. They make it sound like it was just nothing but sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That right. was not the way it was. It was it was looking for the truth and in a very commercialized America, full of racial problems, full of Vietnam problems, full of knowledge in my generation that the establishment didn't give a hoot about the common people. And we were all in quest, as Simon and Garfunkel sang, we were looking for America. And Steiner fit right in with that. There was a book out then by a Steiner person, not by Steiner himself, where they take Rudolf Steiner's insights from various places in all his writings and lectures, and then look at it from an American point of view, from the eyes of this nation that is the only nation in the world that has the Bill of Rights, which is a very enlightened document, and what how that fits into a spiritual life would be how I'd say it. Because Steiner saw that, he said that all these great religions that we've had, like Islam, Judaism, Christianity, and now Buddhism, you have mainly a one God, and it's set up in a certain way to give people guidance to live a good life. And there's a reason for that. You know, it initially religio means to join back together what's been torn apart. Okay. Originally religion was really to help people get through this veil of tears in a way, and so that they could prepare for their death and entering the spiritual world, is how I call it. And that's where you go over things, and you one of the first things you go over is the life you've lived here this last time, and you feel what it feels like, or whatever you doled out to people, good and bad. You really experience it deeply so that you understand what you have really done out of your will, your spiritual will. And then you enter the spiritual world at various planes of existence where, you know, if you've achieved some real goodness and the true, the beautiful, and the good here, as the Greeks might put it, then you'll end up in a different place than someone who led a totally unconscious life. And just okay. sort of did the behavior out of reaction response. That idea that religion once had a good purpose, but now what we're experiencing is that all these great religions, says Steiner, are now sort of losing that juice that they. It's just inevitable here. You can't. Nothing lasts forever here, as we say. But he said that the most amazing thing about living now is that your life, your daily life, the way you live, just your regular life, whatever station in life you have, is really your means of initiation into your divine self. And so it's not a matter of going to a particularly holy place and having a holy teacher and obeying certain precepts in order to be holy. But it's a matter of facing real life, whatever is coming at you, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, and deciding in the moment with your spiritual will what you will do or not do. And this is very hard to do. And he really opened up big time in his teachings, in my opinion, in 1917, during the First World War, when he saw how the Allied forces or Axis forces, whichever, they didn't call them that then, but it was the same players, how they were using chemical warfare to destroy an entire generation of youth in Europe. And he became so concerned because he knew who was behind it. It wasn't a matter of whether it was Churchill or Roosevelt or whoever. It was the secret brotherhoods. And I don't know if you remember the John Kennedy speech. I don't know if Martin Luther King ever talked about it. He talked about things very close to it. But John Kennedy came out and said, just months before he was killed, secret societies and secrets in general were destroying this country. And and that was a very brave, I don't think he was foolish. I think he knew exactly what he was saying. It was a very brave thing to say because, as you know, now you hardly ever see anything about secret societies, and they're still running everything.
Yes,
so
they are.
What Steiner saw in 1917, what he called the left-handed brotherhoods, those would be the ones who were serving the dark side, what they were doing, he came out with his words blazing, and that is why he was killed early. He died at 64 of being poisoned because he would not remain silent about certain things. One of the things he said that has come up recently in this last 3 years of the jab is that a vaccination would be created and distributed by doctors to actually make it so that human beings would not be able to remember their spiritual side.
Oh, wow.
And that was 100 years ago he said that. And that's come out a lot. Various doctors have quoted him. So there's a bit of a resurgence now for Rudolf Steiner, who's, you know, his translated lectures and books they're not the easiest thing in the world to read. And in a materialistic society like ours, where everybody thinks that, you know, if I can just take a pill, I'm good. Rather than that whole idea of really working on your spirit, your spiritual self, and bringing it to the fore without deciding whether you're a Catholic or a Jew or a Buddhist or whatever, that you can meet the moment and read what needs to happen for the good, the true, and the beautiful. And then you do it. And that's your evolution lies on this path. So I did not know he was such a giant. All I knew is he's going to teach me how to be a really great teacher, and that's what I want. But I've spent years now, 45 years. I mean, you know, wow. And I'm not a joiner. I tried to be a member of the Anthroposophic Society because his way is called Anthroposophy, very similar to Theosophy, but Anthropos meaning man or the human being, Anthroposophic. I was not able to be a member of that society. I'm on my own. But I have his books, you know, that's the beauty of the books is you've got the words. So now you can contemplate those words. You can live in those words. You can reread those words and they still speak to you, even though the man who spoke them is on the other side in the spiritual world, or maybe he's reincarnated by now. I don't know. But for me, it was I call him my trailblazer. And and he informs everything I do. And that's why I'm working so hard now, because I have realized that transhumanists actually may succeed in destroying the human race as it has been for millions of years. And I do not want that. I do not want the human being to be a cyborg, to be a machine, primarily run by an AI, and there is no chance that you can retain your own human will. So I study Steiner, and I study a lot of the people who are working with Steiner's ideas to see how they're looking at things, because you can't do it all here. I mean, there's lots of interesting people that I could be looking at, but to do it thoroughly, I tend to be a one-track girl. Like, you know, I'm writing a book, the world hardly exists for me. I'm writing a book. That way I know I can get some things done.
Wow. Alana, that's beautiful. I mean, how you explained in the beginning, you wanting to travel to China and you know, going to Hawaii and discovering that book and everything else you said, to me, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that it has been a divine experience for you, that you have been placed here in this time, in this moment to do what you do. You are definitely doing your purpose, and I thank you for what you do. You know, that's we need more people like you, or more people to find their purpose, to work for the light, and to do these things, these divine things for humanity. So, as they say, hats off to you. That's amazing. And I also want to add, when you were talking about the 60s and how the propaganda has been, the 60s were all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. However, you said that wasn't the case, that it was more so of people looking for truth. I can't help but think how that mirrors what's going on now in today's day and age, especially over the last 3 years or so. I always talk about how there's been this awakening of people, you know, and as I told you earlier, it may have been before we hit record, but I've gone through this spiritual death and rebirth, which happened in 2020, and I've been on this journey. Well, I've been on a journey my entire life, but it really took a strong pivot about 3 years ago. And again, it mirrors what's going on today. And that brings me to the transhumanism, as you briefly touched on there. Wow, it's so many things in regards to that. But before we get to that, I want to ask you about spiritual warfare. I don't even want to ask you, because I already know the question. Do you believe we're in spiritual warfare? I know you believe that, right? So the transhumanism is another part of that, right? And what is the main purpose of the transhumanism agenda or movement or whatever we want to call it? And I want to get into the vax as well in regards to that, because I've had people on the show that say, hey, the nanotechnology, that is a part of it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's huge, because recently a book came out. Let me just show you the title.
Sure. COVID vaccines from a spiritual perspective. Okay.
Read the subtitle.
Oh, consequences for the soul and spirit and for life after death. Okay.
All right. Okay. So this, I just was on Sasha Stone's show with the man who wrote this book in an interview thing. And this is the book that blew my mind. I know we're in a spiritual war. This is a war of good versus evil. It's had many dramatic acts over the thousands of years that we have basically been controlled by what we call the global elite, by the very wealthy, by the very powerful, by those who think that the end justifies the means. Okay. And who have a very different, virtue to them is it's pretty much the opposite of what virtue is to me. So when this thing started 3 years ago, immediately I recognized one of the major components of it when I saw the footage from Wuhan of the people dropping over like flies. And I realized that it had to do with what I'd been studying, which was 5G, and that Wuhan had flipped the switch, the 5G switch on. I knew that it was really setting up an infrastructure of 5G that would be what we'd call state of the art. I mean, super, super 5G. Beyond belief, strong 5G, because they had those two bio-warfare labs in Wuhan. And for that kind of work, you have a lot of high-tech machinery that you have to provide juice for. And I knew that that's what had happened, and that these people who dropped over, I mean, you can say that they were actors. I don't care. Go ahead, say they're actors. But the point was that the message was going out to the world that this technology was being released. And the dropping over was simply a matter of, it just sucked all the oxygen out of them. And I know that very well. That's 60 gigahertz. I know the frequency. I know the number. And that's what it does. It just sucks up your oxygen and you don't have any anymore. And you can't go very long without oxygen for your brain or your heart. So I recognized that. It seemed like it was like a clarion call of the war that was about to ensue.
Interesting.
Because 5G, people had been resisting 5G. You know, a lot of people were saying, oh, no big deal. It's just one more. It's just like 4G and one more, you know, generation. No. No, it was very different because of its structure. And I study these things. I'm not particularly a biologist, but I had studied biology in college. I'm not a physicist. I've had to really catch up a lot. But fortunate for me, we're shifting from one form of physics to another now. So if you've studied Einsteinian physics and have a PhD in it, that's not going to do you much good for the physics that's coming now.
Okay.
So all of us have to start at the beginning of this new physics that they're not really teaching us about. They don't really want us to know, but that's what's going down. And I am very good at studying. I'm very good at research. And I just sort of have been burying myself for years in figuring out where the transhumanism, how they're going to do this singularity thing, how they're going to bring this transhumanism forward. But if I were to take all the things I know, and I know quite a bit now, about transhumanism and the people who serve it, I would say there's definitely a crossroads between the transhumanist and the Satanist. Definitely.
Okay.
The Satanist, you know, a lot of people think Satanism is just sort of like Halloween or something. No, this is, it's a real religion, and it's a very strange religion in that it doesn't believe in the God that, you know, Christians and Muslims and Jews believe in. It's the dark gods. It's the unredeemed gods, you might say, the fallen angels, however you want to say. And, you know, to most Americans or people in the West in general, they're all materialists. They don't believe in that stuff. That's all not true. That's childish.
Right.
It's unfortunate because you can say all you want about how some things don't exist, but that doesn't affect the fact that they do exist.
Exactly.
And that you need real tools and real weapons to stand in that realm and to protect humanity from them. So Steiner is just the best. I mean, the best for this, because he talks about these entities, and he's clairvoyant. I'm not. He's clairvoyant, so he can see them, and he can describe them, and, you know, and other people who are clairvoyant can do the same. So you use your eyes and ears wherever you find them, and you don't toss them out because they don't fit your idea of what they should be talking about. Such as I find I have trouble. I think I have trouble with Bible Christians, when the fact is I'm totally a Christian. I had a huge Christian experience, experience of Christ actually, in my college classroom when I was 25 years old. And
really?
I admit that after that experience and after I realized who it was, because when it happened, I didn't know who it was, but I knew it was a who. And it was a very powerful being of light. Just, you know, I was overwhelmed. And fortunately, I had this great teacher who just dismissed the whole class while I was sort of in this visionary state. And then later when I found out who it was, I'd not been raised Christian. I knew nothing about it, but I knew Jesus was a good guy.
Uh-huh.
And I had read things he had said, and I had always felt like, wow, he's amazing. But it didn't occur to me that I would ever be what is known as a Christian, because I truthfully had never met any Christians that I particularly admired. It seemed like they all wanted to go to church and have a nice coffee hour and, say a few prayers and then go back out to their real life.
Exactly. Right.
And I didn't really understand that. So I was not thrilled when I realized who it was. I was like, oh, no, I couldn't have been Buddha. I mean, he was cool. He was cool in the 60s. Jesus was less cool. So, but I said, no, I'm with you. If you're really still alive on some spiritual plane and you're still happening, and boy, you know, that experience, it definitely was really happening. So I have always known that the transhumanism, because it believes in man as a machine, that it cannot be a belief, it cannot have to do with the real nature of God. It has nothing to do with the real nature of God. In fact, it assumes, and certainly Yuval Harari, you've probably heard him, this mouthpiece for the globalists, you know, when he says that, you know, there is no soul, there is no God.
Yeah.
We're gonna create God. We're gonna create a God in our own image. When you hear that, my whole nature is just no. This is doomed. Mm-hmm. This will not work, because there is a real spiritual world, and there is a real struggle between good and evil, and I know which side I'm on. So the transhumanism is, all the scientists who work for it, I would assume, are really have their eyes on the prize, being the science, their careers, the Nobel Prize.
Right.
They've got their eyes on the phenomena and the data they're coming up from the phenomena, and they're not at all thinking about, wow, this stuff could be alive. I mean, what if this has its own nature and will take over? For example, they've released now on untold trillions nanotechnology. That's what I write about in the geoengineering books, about this avalanche coming down from the sky that's pre-chosen, pre-prepared to enter us through our breathing, through our eating, through our drinking, through our skin even, and go into our bodies, into the blood, past the blood-brain barrier, and it's all intended to serve transhumanism, all of it.
So what are we talking, like chemtrails and just the vaccines, yep. These different? Okay, yep. Gotcha.
The vaccines appear to be, because they came much later. The chemtrails we have had for over 20 years. We've had it about 25 years. But because they keep it out of the media, we tend to forget it. So, you know, we look up at the sky, oh, those are clouds. Well, no, we haven't had real clouds in this world since they started this program that I try to expose. These are plasma clouds, and they're created by electromagnetics, lasers, and particulate matter. So, you know, this world, this atmosphere that we're breathing is completely different, and it's loaded with nano-sized things. Some of them are alive and really are partially organic and partially inorganic. Some of them are just little tiny, tiny machines. And we breathe it in, and it goes in here, and now it has a transceiver system. I mean, it can transmit and it can receive. It's an electromagnetic communication system. And they're all very tiny, so they get into our tissues, and they get into various organs, and depending on how our health is and how we eat and take care of ourselves or not, then, you know, we more or less may not suffer too much until they, just as in the Wuhan, flip the switch and turn the system on, because they're all set to respond to 5G and 6G. Mm-hmm. And that's absolute. There is no question. A lot of doctors and medical researchers now know this. And it's because nothing, a lot is still sort of like, I don't know if you notice it, but it seems to me that we're at a point now where we're sort of holding our breath and kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop on this drama we've been in for 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of us want to believe it's over. We can get back to our lives. Mm-hmm. Not me. So something is brewing. I know that. So I am now trying to prep people for becoming much more conscious of their health and divesting themselves of dependency on the medical establishment. It simply cannot be trusted, nor can the big pharma. I mean, you know, I haven't had an aspirin. I haven't had a pill since I was 13.
Oh, wow.
I'll be 76 this year.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Everything works. I'm a health nut. I eat healthy. You know, I overeat sometimes because it's the only pleasure left in life. I've given up all the others. But I want to share with people how easy it is, even in this this era of chemicals and electromagnetism and nanotech, you can be healthy, and you just have to sort of live a life not according to your desire, particularly like, ooh, I'd love an ice cream sundae. Well, I need to make that decision. And, you know, the number of ice cream sundaes I've had in the last 50 years is probably, you know, I could count them on one hand. So, you know, you change your nature in order to make sure that your consciousness and your mind are clear so that you've got the most important part that you need so that you're not a broken down old lady or old man or dependent on, you know, 25 pills a day. Yeah. So to me, that's what I'm going toward now. I mean, I spent years just talking about geoengineering, how it worked, you know, how HARP worked, high frequency auroral up in Gakona, Alaska, how we could protect ourselves from some of what was coming down. But now, ever since the jab, I've turned to realizing that I need to really try to prepare people to never go back to the hospital system, barring being in a car accident where you've got to have your bones set or you've got to be sewed up, stitched up really fast so you don't lose blood or something along those lines. But almost everything else that we're all so scared of, particularly cancer, I have been involved in the macrobiotic movement years ago, and I still am primarily macrobiotic. Are you familiar with that term?
No, I'm not. What is that?
So macrobiotics was a sort of an offshoot of Chinese medicine. When I was studying Chinese medicine, before I took off to go to China, I thought, I had a teacher in Boston who was teaching us. We lived in a big study house, we called it. It was like a mansion, but we had a lot of people coming from all over the world who had been given basically death sentences of cancer was one of the big ones. And they heard about this Japanese guy who had a different way of eating, a different way of preparing food and eating, where people were getting better. So they were coming to us, a lot of people. We had a big waiting list. And our job as students, because we would at night study with Michio, he would give lectures and we would study and we'd have drawings and, you know, we were really prepping ourselves. And his great dream was to prepare the American youth for times just like this. He knew it was coming and he too wanted to prepare us and avoid it. You know, I just had that, ability to recognize wisdom when I saw it. I was pretty lost in many other ways, but that one I had down. And I knew that it wasn't something you'd say, well, I'll do that in a few years. No, you got to do it now because they may not be around. You got to really strike while the iron is hot. When you hear that invitation, it was like when Christ came for me. You know, I heard the invitation. And was I going to say, well, you know, I'd prefer Buddha or, you know, maybe later, man? No, I knew that this was a once in a lifetime. And so I poured myself into studying with Michio Kushi because he was not only a great teacher, but he understood so many things that he could draw together in a Chinese yin-yang kind of way where it made sense to you. So what I say to people now is, you know, you've got to stop eating GMOs. I know they're cheaper, and that doesn't matter. What matters is that you eat organic. And I know that the organic, too, is growing out in the fields, and therefore all the stuff coming down from the chemtrails is coming onto the organic food the same. But organic food, unlike GMOs, I don't know if people really know this. Organic food is from real natural seed. Mm-hmm. GMOs are not. That's right. Not natural food.
Right.
That
right.
has almost no nutrition in it. It's synthetic. And why did they do that? Why are they setting up all these synthetic farms? Because they want us to be synthetic, us to be transhumans.
Yeah.
And they want to break down the bodies of the natural human beings, make them sick so that they then give profit and do whatever they're told by the medical industry. I call it a medical cartel. I mean, to me, there's no difference between the drug cartel and the medical big pharma cartel. They're the same. They're
so
pushing
true.
They're pushing drugs
same
and they
thing.
Push surgery. So they don't know health from a hole in the wall. So this, having studied that cancer, what I found there was that cancer is the easiest thing to cure. I mean, so easy. If you don't eat junk food. If you don't eat synthetic food, that's what junk food is. It's synthetic. It's not real. And all the things that come from this society in the name of profit and commoditization, that's all synthetic. And that's about transhumanism. It always was about transhumanism. That's the sad part. You know, I used to eat potato chips and drink Pepsi and stuff when I was a teenager. I didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. But had I known that it was serving the coffers of the transhumanists that have never forgotten their plan to make a human being into a slave that really didn't cost much to keep. That's what a synthetic cyborg will be, because we'll be mostly machine. Mm-hmm. I might have done something different, because I've always had an ear out for the wise thing to do to retain ourselves, because I know power serves itself. I've never trusted the establishment, so-called. Never. And my generation in general, we did not trust the establishment, which makes it a real surprise, doesn't it, that the young people today, they're willing to do whatever the corporations tell them to do.
Any and everything. Yes, they are.
Unbelievable. And that's the advantage of those blankety blank cell phones. I've never owned one. I never will. It's a weapon system. Ooh. It has all those apps that'll just dig into your minds and take them over and program you. Same thing with the TV. I have no TV. I've never owned a TV. Wow. The television is created to mind control us. So I do have a computer, this little laptop here that I'm talking to you on. And it is a weapon system. I'm very aware of that. But I need it in order to communicate with the world. I'm not going to be a Luddite. But I take measures. I have all sorts of funny stuff around the computer in order to ameliorate the radiation that it's pulsing out at me. And as far as, you know, the programming it's doing, I don't think it's really has much effect on me because I don't have a TV or an iPhone. So anyway, that talked about that. And let's go back to the transhumanist thing that you mentioned. How many other ways are they pummeling us with transhumanism? So many ways you wouldn't believe. I mean, you've got to really give them some credit for the fact that they've been working on this for a century.
Yeah.
They've been getting ready for a century. And, you know, we've been busy. We've been busy paying mortgages and having our kids and, you know, and trying to figure things out here while the media is taken over by the CIA. I mean, you know, once you begin digging, you will, if there are people out there who are interested in doing that, just remember, you may go through a period. I mean, I've sat in this chair and wept. You know, I have gone through the realization of where we're at and wept. And then I'm ready to go on because every day is a new day. And there are millions of us who are waking up now.
Spiritual warrior. Yeah. That's what you
always.
Are.
Yes. And that's, and to me, that's, you know, it's how you live. It's not necessarily all the things you accomplish.
Right.
It's what you give yourself to. That's really what the spiritual world is looking at. Not mm-hmm. your big successes, mm-hmm. but not the numbers game, but the quality
yes.
of your commitment mm-hmm. and your intent to serve the good, the beautiful, and the true. And I have no, you know, for me, well, now I'm 75. So, I mean, there's no temptations. The only temptation is maybe to have a second helping or something when I know I really shouldn't, you know, to keep my pot belly down. That's pretty small potatoes when you're in the sin category. So, you know, this how you live and what you give yourself to. Like that TV show that you just can't do without. Is that really true? You know, is that worth the time and the effort to actually have that one-eyed monster in the living room and in the bedroom and everywhere else that's tempting you, maybe tempting? I just recently talked with a young man who has finally been influenced enough by me to say he gave up his cell phone. He just threw it out. Wow. And he said that for the first time in years, he has his own thoughts. Mm-hmm. He said, I didn't know what was in my head before weren't my thoughts. I didn't know that, but now I know. Those weren't my thoughts.
Right.
I feel free now. And one of the things that the cell phone was setting him up for was pornography. Mm-hmm. Pornography. Mm-hmm. When he would have a minute, you know, he would just kind of sink into that synthetic life, I call it, right?
Yeah.
But that's not a natural human being looking at pictures of half naked or naked people. You know, that's just not. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of software that's in these technologies that we're so unaware of. We don't know. That's some very slippery, subtle,
very sneaky
guys put that kind of thing in there to make it mm-hmm. addictive too. You see mm-hmm. all those people looking at their phones all the time. That's mm-hmm. addiction.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
was one of the things he went through when he threw the cell phone out is at first he felt really good. And then a few days later, he went through a depression and, you know, and then the voices of that temptation to look at the porn kind of crawling back up, and meanwhile he's feeling really down and really kind of lost. He's a musician, so now he's writing amazing songs because he made it through that. So you know, that's one of the things to do in order to figure out what's going on is immediately look at your relationship with your technologies. Because if you have a problem, an electromagnetic problem, and I think just about everyone does who owns all these military toys, then you're not gonna be strong enough when it's pushed to shove. It's gonna suck your will, because if we were clairvoyant, and we could see what is coming in with these waves, these microwaves, these radio waves, all different frequencies. If we could just see you know, there are entities floating all over the place.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. And I kind of wanted to ask you about CERN as well and how that ties into things, because I've always heard that, you know, CERN is being used to open portals and to allow these entities to come through. And the other part, which is kind of different, but maybe along the same lines, is I heard you say one time that transhumanism, people that fall or cross over into the transhumanism category will no longer qualify for human rights. And I heard you say that on a show, and I thought that was so interesting. So I would love for you to take some time to kind of talk through those two things.
Well, I think what I said, and it was very interesting because it might have been at that talk that a man talked to me after who said, you know, I'm a lawyer, and I would love to see what you just said as happening, that there's actually an act being passed that talks about, I mean, it's, do you remember back in the 60s, 70s, maybe 80s, somewhere in there, when on the internet you could find these documents that said that the UN was looking at the rights of aliens, of UFO aliens. Mm-hmm. And there were whole documents on ETs. And, you know, a lot of people thought it was kind of a joke and not true and that. But I think they really were looking at the possibility because it was very in our face at that time. And a lot of it was disinformation coming from the military to cover up very top secret programs that they were doing. I'm not just talking about exotic propulsion craft. I'm talking about what they were doing to people who were having these alien experiences, who'd been abducted, who felt they'd been abducted, and what was happening to them, and women claiming to have babies that were, you know, from aliens, and that whole thing. They were running experiments on people as well as technology. And I think that's more of the same now, is now they know that, and they know that a transhuman race is in the making right now. And that is true. I assume you realize that this jab, that's exactly what it was.
Right.
So
right.
How many people have been jabbed? Well, the last I heard was 6 billion.
Mm.
So if 6 billion people have been jabbed at least once, and it looks like the magic number is 3.
3, yes.
So what's going on there? Well, probably several things, because they're all different batches. They're all different vials of substance that is being injected into people's arms, and they have different purposes because this is all pretty experimental. So you have the genetic part, which would be the mRNA and the spike protein, and you've got that. If indeed the spike protein is real, now, it's also true that a lot of the people looking into the serums of all the different ones, Pfizer, Moderna, et cetera, that they're not finding any mRNA in those serums.
Really?
So that could be that some people are not being inoculated with the genetic transformation that we're led to believe is going into people's arms. But what is going into people's arms almost across the board every time from the serums and then looking at the blood after the jabs is computer parts, little tiny, we're talking nano-sized. So you're seeing routers, you're seeing circuit boards, you're seeing wires, you're seeing all the things that a computer would have, but on a very tiny scale. And then there would be the software that's going in with the jabs. And so obviously that, with that part of the picture, because to me, I see two sides to the picture, the genetic side and then the cybernetic side. This is okay. Cybernetics. So obviously they definitely are programming, have in mind to program people to respond to the 5G, 6G system by being completely computerized. Now, we know that they're on Bluetooth, right? Everybody who's been jabbed is being followed closely by Bluetooth. So, you know, even to the point, I don't know if you saw that video, but the one where the guys have some sort of machine that can detect electronics, and they're finding that all these people in the graveyard all have blue lights coming up out of the graves from the Bluetooth connectivity to what has been put into them with the jab. And there it is. Boom. So what's that about? I mean, it may sound silly, but, you know, I showed you this. Possibly they could be tracking, because it's electromagnetic, and that is not alive, and it's throughout the universe. You know, there are electromagnetics in the universe. Possibly they're tracing and tracking people after they've died.
Wow, their souls. Wow. It does not sound silly to me. Not at all. I could totally
well
believe
that. And so we have this transhuman thing has already been loosed. It's already a done deal. But not everyone will succumb to it. Now, what are those parts that are different that makes one person completely a robot from what they've been injected with? And another, same injections, not so. Well, it's part of it may be their individuality, who this person is, what they've done with themselves as moral beings, as true human beings. Because what makes a human being really a human being, a real true human being? Well, not the head, two arms, two legs, and a thorax. No, it's that moral standing.
Right,
their moral that ability, you know, exactly what the Bible and the Quran and all these great books from all the way back to the Vedas have told us for centuries, that there is a certain quality that is human, i.e., the human is a divine being, a divine being that has its own frequencies, and if it stands with those frequencies and establishes through the pineal gland, which of course is under serious attack by the electromagnetics,
yes,
through the pineal gland keeps its contact with the divine world, then, you know, there's some power there. There's some real power there, because we would have massive allies. You know, that's what I keep telling people. We are not alone. Let me tell you, there are armies of angels.
So living a divine or a highly ethical life, a high moral living in the light, is essentially your protection from these things. It's like you're putting on your armor, if you will.
I love it. Paul talks about in, I can't remember if it's Corinthians or Romans or Galatians, somewhere in there, he talks about putting on the breastplate of faith and the this and the that. And I'm like, that's language I understand. So the transhuman, it was inevitable, all right? I mean, that doesn't let Big Pharma and the government and the military off the hook, not at all. But it was inevitable that we would come to the day when Pandora's box would be opened and all sorts of hell would fly out along the lines of a transhuman nightmare. So I believe it's happening. I believe it's not over, because what makes people so willing to line up and do this to themselves, even knowing that it's experimental, even knowing that, you know, all this other information has come out with, which mostly, I mean, shocking as it sounds, most people have not even seen this information. How is that? Well, because they're paying attention to the TV.
Exactly.
And they're paying attention to the cell phone, which has certain apps on it that will make sure you don't see certain things. Yeah. So, you know, and I think it's that we're at the point in our evolution as human beings where we need to stop waiting for the authority figures to tell us what to do and what is true and what mm-hmm. is not true. Mm-hmm. We need to stop. Now it's a matter of what I said, Steiner said, that the only real path of initiation in life now is not to be a Christian or a Buddhist or in anything else. No, it's daily life, and it's to make your own decisions and stand by them and take what comes of those decisions.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where we're at now, is we're having to really develop our own strength. Not to say, oh yeah, I'm strong, I'm a God, there is no other God. No, I don't mean that. I mean, there is God, but this God, is the God like a big daddy in the sky that's going to make our decisions for us? No. Mm-hmm. No, we have to make our own decisions. We need to grow up now. And we need to take responsibility for how we live our lives, what the food we put into our bodies, what our children are doing when we're not around. You know, these things that we have devolved in a way to letting the government take over, the TV take over, the public schools, and we don't know who's teaching them, take over. You know, these things are this is the path of initiation, is taking stock of how you're living and exactly what you're giving your permission to by not interfering with it. And that's something that Americans have gotten very weak in this, very weak. And really the strongest in that are like the Christians and maybe the other religions as well. But I, you know, a lot of Christians write me and I have to admit they're watchful. They're guarding their children. They're trying to the real Christians. I don't mean the churchianity people that go to church and feel like that's good enough. Yeah. The real ones who walk the walk.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, I don't know how long you want me to take. Go. Are we okay?
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine. Keep going. Keep
you
going.
Told this me is, an hour.
This is good. Hey, you know, I can't stop you now. A lot. I can't. This is too good. This is too good. I'm blown away over here. This is awesome.
Yeah. So what I learned in this book, which I highly recommend to everyone, it's the most unusual book you're ever going to read. These are people who have that ability. My grandmother, my Romanian grandmother, was a Roma gypsy. She was clairvoyant. She could see the future. So, you know, she was kind of like the whole neighborhood's, should I go to, you know, Pittsburgh or, you know, whatever? Am I going to be all right? You know, she was that person. I think that there are people with clairvoyance. They are not necessarily evil people. This is just their eyesight works differently from ours, and mm-hmm. they can be really helpful on the trail, you know, of this
warfare. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a shame that in certain religions that the clairvoyance people have been, you know, taught to be evil. Yeah, judge. Oh, they're evil. It's satanic, things like that. And, you know, something I wanted to ask you about as well, stomach clairvoyance. I know that's kind of on a different topic there, but kind of explain what that is, because I heard you talking about who was the guy who assassinated John Lydon? Was it Mark David Chapman? Yeah.
John Lennon? Yeah.
Yes. Well,
it was said to be Mark David Chapman. I'm now not so sure, but you know, I'm like that. Did he have? Yeah, and he had stomach problems. Yeah, it is something I've noticed. And then I learned about the second brain. You know, it's like we say things like, "I don't have the guts for that." You know, right. we have these things in our language that indicate that that something's coming from the metabolic system is what it is, the stomach, the intestines, that is more than just digestion. And the stomach is called the second brain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you'll know something about someone. They'll seem like they're squeaky clean and a good person. But, you know, it's like when I used to look at Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. I could not look at him. I would be nauseous immediately as soon as I looked at him. Uh-huh. And I didn't know why, because it had nothing to do with race. it had to do with something in him that I did not have the stomach for. And I think that's the kind of clairvoyance that we have with our gut. We go with things with our gut, or we don't. And a lot of people who are entered by entities and taken over by entities, they have stomach problems almost too completely. That's how you know. You know, and in the case of Chapman, I think he always could tell when it was entering him because he would get that pain.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, it's a shame that most doctors certainly don't know that and think it's all silly. But certainly a lot of therapists who work with schizophrenics know that, because the schizophrenic, and I think they're misdiagnosed, but anyway, schizophrenic, I think that they can feel these entities coming in and out. And because we don't have that kind of wisdom in our medical professions, they immediately feel it's nonsense. Certainly the old ways, and, you know, and often we assume that we're so much wiser than the old ways. I don't know where we got that idea. Because we have lost a lot. We've lost a lot of ground. But the old ways are that the body, you know, knows. Because the body, according to Rudolf Steiner even, he says the body is much older than we are who live in these bodies. Much older.
Really?
The body was created millions of years ago and worked on, not by aliens either, but by the spiritual world and the forces of this planet worked on these bodies. And then the bodies were finally ready for us to incarnate into as spiritual beings. So, you know, someday we're going to leave this beloved body. Mm-hmm. And I certainly love my body. It's been very good to me because I've been very good to it.
Right, right.
But I'm very clear that the body and I are not the same.
Yeah.
You know, I live in this. This is my temple that my spirit lives in, and I take good care of it. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I? You know, I'm going to need that. And I remember as a kid saying to myself, or in the 60s, I would say, I was maybe in my 20s. I remember saying to myself, I'm going to eat well. You know, we'd be out there gardening in our organic garden because we were very interested in all the things that the establishment said we shouldn't do. And, you know, growing organic food was definitely one of them. So we were growing organic food, and I would say to myself, I'm going to eat well my whole life so I'm not a broken down old lady.
And that's exactly what you did.
That's what I did.
That's right.
It's amazing. Because in some ways I wasn't very wise and I was pretty dysfunctional. I had a very dysfunctional family. I was dysfunctional, but in other ways I was like, oh yeah, I know what to do and I'm going to do it. And I have done it. It's amazing. I don't know how I did that, because I really wasn't that strong of a person, but I had certain things in place and I needed them and I knew it. And I really thank macrobiotics and Michio Kushi and, you know, that whole beginning where I realized, wow, I really am what I eat. I mean, I really got that, because I did fasts. I did mono fasts. One day, well, I don't know how much you want me to talk about that, but I'll say one more thing. One day, a bunch of Harvard medical students came over to our mansion where we were helping people with cancer and leukemia and things. They wanted to draw our blood. So we all had to sign a form. And they said that they had already done it at another house we had. And that they had been shocked to see that our calcium levels were so high when they knew we didn't eat meat and we didn't eat dairy. So how come you've got calcium just coming out your pores? So they took our blood and they checked us too, and we all had super high calcium levels. Well, the reason that happened is I have a book here by a guy that I met once in those days, a French biochemist, because what happens is you eat a food that has a lot of magnesium in it, which would be like greens, like, you know, kale, chard. And from that, it will change through oxidation in the body. And that's what digestion is. It's a process of oxidation. Through that process, that magnesium becomes calcium. Okay. In other words, there is a transmutation going on with the periodic table. These elements that are all in little boxes that we had in high school science, they're moving from, they're transforming. Mm-hmm. And nobody told us that. And I know that many scientists know that. Mm-hmm. But they don't let us know. So, you know, you have the idea that you need animals to have calcium. That's not true. Mm-hmm. You can do it as a vegetarian because it's transmuting the whole time that it's in your body. So things like that where, you know, that was what the 60s was to me, was we were all sort of, we knew what we were told was true. But then now and then we'd have a conversation and we'd start going over it, or we would experiment with some diet that somebody had recommended or something like that. And we would go over that and figure out, wow, that thing we were taught was not true. How far do the lies go with this establishment?
Right.
And you know, and that's one of the biggest things I got from my 60s generation, is we were really thinking before they started the CIA, I'll blame them. Before they really got going on destroying the thinking in youth, in with crappy education and nasty foods that taste good and addict you, but are really destroying your ability to think, and all the electromagnetics that also interfere with your thinking. So, you know, to destroy thinking was one of the largest operations, psyops, that they had going. They did not want Americans thinking. And they, just as they're experimenting on this generation of youth with the transgender crap,
right?
They were working on my generation with bad drugs in the street, all treated with speed, like, you know, acid treated with speed and mushrooms treated with speed. And destroying the thinking, the ability to think things out for yourself. Mm-hmm. So you would turn to authority figures because your thinking just was all muddled and you couldn't figure out one thing from another. Mm-hmm. That's all like a science now. They're doing it now to everybody.
Well, hey, I tell you, it seems like the CIA has their hand in almost every facet everything. Of society, everything. Yeah.
They are not an intelligence agency. I really want people to, I mean, you know, people make fun of me too. Oh, Ilana, you blame everything on the CIA. Well, that's almost true because I know a lot about the CIA. I was so pissed off about Kennedy's assassination. And we all knew the CIA had been involved. Mm-hmm. We knew they hadn't made the decision, but we knew that they were involved. So I have spent a great deal of time figuring out how the CIA operates. And now they're a corporation, Incutel. That's the name of their corporate arm. But that what that means is they have a, I would say they're involved in every business, like Google. I wonder what their stock holding is in Google. They're in everything. And they were started, the CIA was started by Nazis, by Reinhard Gehlen. Right. You know, a card-carrying SS Nazi. Mm-hmm. You know, they have always been that, the fascist. And they have always been run by the Nazi mindset. So, you know, that's why I studied MKUltra so deeply. For 10 years, I studied MKUltra and read everything I could find. And now I just had lunch with an MKUltra whom I helped write his book, his story of what they had done to him. You know, it's pretty much changed his life to be able to write his story, because he never could have afforded me at that time. But today, you know what he hands me? He hands me an envelope And he's paid me exactly what he owed me if he had paid me in money. He has come up with the cash. I couldn't believe it. Wow. I was like, what, did you rob this? Or where did you get this? Of course, you know, the CIA does not give you any retirement fund,
right,
when you've served them for years. But so anyway, the CIA, I'm always alert to what they're doing because I know their nasty little hand is in everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You talked about Kennedy. You touched on Kennedy for a minute there. I want to know your thoughts regarding why he was assassinated. I know you said earlier he gave that speech and soon after that he died. What do you think is maybe, I don't want to say the main reason, but what are your thoughts on just simply why he was assassinated?
The way I see John Kennedy is that, okay, so you, I don't know, have you heard me say in talks that I had tea with him in the Rose Garden in the summer before he was murdered?
No.
I was at Girls Nation. I'd been elected to go and represent my state girls. 850 girls voted for me to go to Washington and go to Girls Nation because I had been in Girls State. That's a high school thing where you go and you do mock state government. And then you choose someone to go to Washington and do mock federal government. It's a great honor, but it's also they think you have some sort of political zeitgeist in you, and they want to support that. So I went to Washington, and you know we spent about an hour and a half in the Rose Garden with Kennedy having tea. Mm. And it was a tremendous honor to meet him. He mentioned off the cuff that my face, I guess he caught an eye on my face, and he said that I looked like his wife, and that you know made a little bit of news for 5 minutes somewhere. And Bill Clinton was there. He talked about it many times that he was in the Rose Garden at the same time. But I never knew him. And Bill Clinton is MK Ultra. So, you know, poor guy. Yeah. He's never really had his own life like I have my own life. But Kennedy, I think, when he came to Washington, you know how he got the vote barely by his dad, Joe Kennedy's relationship with Sam Giancana, you know, a mafioso. And it was not a very pretty entrance of 100,000 votes into the presidency. And boy, the powers that be that were about to put Nixon in there, just like this Biden character, they must have been just beyond them. So, you know, it's like when Trump won and Hillary lost. It was what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He was just an East Coast rich boy, you know, a white rich boy. He didn't really know what was going down in this country. Really, he didn't know, but he began to study it, and you know, he appointed his brother as Attorney General, and so they had the legal system that they could watch over, and then they had the executive. So now they're studying Washington to see who's running what. And right away, the CIA makes itself known, and we have the, you know, the whole Bay of Pigs thing that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's getting his lessons, and he's definitely not one of the boys. And, you know, and they hate him. They just hate him. And he's Catholic. Oh my God, a Catholic in the White House. Ah! So he had a girlfriend that very few people know. Yeah, he was married to Jackie, but she struck me as programmed. I can't prove it, but I would say she was programmed. And a lot of very young, rich women are prepared for marrying power guys by being programmed and being sexually molested and sort of their personality split through being raped and all sorts of things.
Is that the sex kitten thing I've heard about in regard to this?
The sex kitten thing is really the programming that goes on in the MK Ultra to prepare girls to seduce men and then assassinate them. That's really the program. It includes assassination. No, that's not what Jackie would have had. She would have had the programming that goes on in wealthy families. I'm telling you, it's not a cakewalk for the wealthy. You know, they really treat their young horribly. They just prep them for the reins of power. They don't care about them at all, not at all. So I feel for Jackie. Anyway, John Kennedy had a girlfriend named Mary Pynchon Myers, and she was from a wealthy family in Boston, and they were good friends. And then I think they fell in love or whatever. And she was in touch with Timothy Leary. This is all in her book, by the way, in a book about her. You can read it. She was in touch with Timothy Leary getting really good LSD to give the wealthy ladies of Washington some acid to get their consciousness to, you know, grow up and open up and realize what's going down. And the theory is that John Kennedy took some LSD and expanded his mind and opened himself up. That's what is said in that book, which I think is a real possibility. I mean, if you're raised a certain way and then you fall into something like the presidency, you got to grow up really fast in order to be able to do something. And I think that's what happened. I had LSD 3 times. That's all I did. And it was all the good stuff back when the CIA was running it all. LSD 25, it was called, or Sunshine. And then everything that came after that has been pretty much crap and not to be trusted at all. But anyway, I'm not justifying it because I really learned a lot on those 3 trips, but I had decided not to do any drugs at that point in my life because I saw how it was weakening people in my generation.
Right,
they were just falling by the wayside, taking those, even if they're psychedelics, and you're getting some real wisdom and insight into things. It's still not your consciousness. You're not raising your own consciousness. You're depending on a pill to do it for you, that kind of thing. So anyway, I think John opened up, flowered, and suddenly it was like he pulled the wool from his eyes and saw exactly what a bunch of crooks he was surrounded by and how they hated him. And I assume he knew, like, that, you know, taking the top-down car into Dallas was either arrogance or he knew that whenever he would die, he was not in control of it. And, you know, he was going to do what he was going to do anyway. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I think the Federal Reserve, his plans for the Federal Reserve, which were to
get rid
of it, were part of it. Certainly the Bay of Pigs, he tried to fire Alan Dulles. Oh, big no-no, big no-no. That guy had a lot of power. He and his brother, John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State. There were many reasons, I would say. But I think the biggest reason is he was not the plan. And they always, you know, these PNAC types, these extreme white privileged class people, they always want it their way. There is no other way. And so he had to go. I don't think they realized the depth of the trauma that putting it on TV so that everybody saw it over and over and over and over again, the depth of what that would do to this nation. I don't think they really understood that. They don't strike me as the type who are really smart in psychology, but it really did. And it just, it just broke my generation. I mean, and then that was followed up by Martin Luther King. I mean, okay. come right. on. That right. was like, we yeah. were all just devastated.
Right.
You know, I was at University of Michigan the day King was killed, and we all walked out of class just so depressed.
Wow.
And, you know, we sat there and smoked a lot of pot and drank a lot, just hopeless. And then, you know, and then that was in April of 68. And then in June, Robert Kennedy
was assassinated. Yeah,
So it was years later. This is going to blow your mind. It was years later that I was running the numbers. Okay, so Kennedy was killed on November 22nd. 1963. That's 11/22/63. And then I went, well, when was King killed? Oh, King was killed April 4th. That's 4/4. Okay, so I've got 1/1/22. Now I've got 4/4. And then Robert Kennedy died on June 6th. That's 6/6. So I'm going through these numbers one day when I'm teaching political science in a high school, and I'm just doing it in front of the students because they love for me to do this, to bring my writing into the classroom. Of course, that's probably why I eventually was let go. but anyway, I'm doing that. I'm going 1/1/22/4/4/6/6. So I've always said to myself, what was 8/8? And then this meek little girl in the back of the room raises her hand and says, Miss Freeland, that's August 8th. That's Watergate.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. But see, running the numbers, this is a Freemason nation.
That's what I was going to say. They planned it. They set it up like that. That's how they do, right?
Right. And so, you know, that's how they did it. And then they killed all my generation's rock stars, you know, Lennon being one, but there were others. You know, we loved our rock stars.
Morrison. Hendrix.
They were writing political songs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now, when was the last time you heard a political song? I mean, it's not happening.
It's not
allowed to happen.
Right.
So, anyway, pretty much an amazing time to be alive.
Yes, indeed. Alana, this has been wonderful. I do have one final question for you. This is something I ask each and every guest that comes on the Hidden Gateway podcast, and that's simply to leave our audience with, I like to call, a token of love, simply something that you think that they need to hear right now in this moment as they continue their personal journeys.
Well, I know to some people this looks, you know, and you listen to me and you might think that it's hopeless, but, you know, I'm on fire.
Yes, you are.
I feel, because I know, I mean, I was 8 when I remembered my a previous lifetime. I didn't know it was special then. I didn't know that most people thought you can't do that. But I did. I remembered one. It was 2,500 years ago. I remembered the name and everything. So I know I lived before. And I've lived many times. I don't know all the details. But I'm saying that every era has its challenges. And the challenge to me is merged with your decision of why you decided to come right now. This is no accident. And even, you know, even if your family has been the focus of tremendous pain, you chose that family to make certain qualities in you, and you, There is no way you're going to miss this moment in your own odyssey of lifetimes. So bring the best you've got to the fore and develop it so that you can play your role here that you've already known you would be playing.
Oof.
Or I don't know how long.
Oof.
Because this is a tremendous opportunity to be here. You can do things here that you can't do when you leave here. You understand that? This is the only place you can develop certain things. So get busy and don't do antidepressants or any of that big pharma stuff. Just stay away from it. Just take this on. This is a tremendous opportunity.
Excellent, beautiful. I couldn't ask for a better response. Thank you so much. This conversation has literally blew me away. This is a classic episode, and I thank you so much. God bless you, and thank God you for all you do. This is just phenomenal. I'm going to have to, you know, I want you to come back on the show. I want to devote an hour, maybe an hour and a half. I want to really dig deep into MK Ultra and maybe even like direct energy weapons, because you know, I know you know so much about that. So maybe some point in the future. Yeah.
It's everywhere now. Okay, we'll do it. All right,
all
Justin.
Right. Okay, bless I just thank you. Thank you so much. And I'll be in contact. Okay, bye-bye.